Ever wonder why 95% of leads do not convert? Why cold call rates are down and prospects don't open our emails? Why our responses of robocalls and implanting pixels to track user interaction, mostly without permission, is backfiring spectacularly? Well, that's what we intend to find out here in the Buyerside Chat podcast. There are scores of podcasts about selling, but most miss the shift that has come upon the buying-selling process. The initiative has since moved from the supply to the demand side. The Buyerside Chat, your podcast of record for B2B buying, talks to actual buyers, persons, not personas, in the quest to understand the real buyer's journey, their trials and tribulations, challenges and outcomes they're striving for. Welcome to the Buyerside Chat. Thank you for your time and for joining us on this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give a shout out to each of you in our next episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Today, we have with us Kevin Dixon, the founder and CEO of Boxstep, a B2B SaaS sales platform that complements CRM by focusing on the buyer committee and aligning selling with buying.
I started selling in 84 when it was far more seller-centric, and it's what I call the good old days because it was so much easier. I met with the managing director of the company, and in those days, they weren't pre-informed. They didn't have access to all the information that the internet gives us. So the first thing would be to educate them. And it was a lot more telling than selling in those days. You'd educate them. So it was almost like a pitch, propose, and close. So I could tell them all about this great Ericsson Enterprise telephone system. I could then go on my price list. I can add it all up, and he'd go, okay, that works. And whether it was a capital expenditure or whether they wanted to lease it, I then had carbon copied paper where I could write the order out and they could sign it. And then that solitary decision maker would tell the rest of his organization, by the way, I bought this new Ericsson telephone system. Over a period of time I moved on from being a sales guy to being a sales leader. And I started to see that it was changing, that more and more contacts were getting involved.
Kevin has spent his entire sales career in complex and enterprise sales, including 20 years in executive leadership positions. This includes Ericsson, Siemens, and Logica, plus successful startup Ilata, who were the original pioneers for app download to mobile devices. His experience spans startups, mid-size, as well as global corporations, privately owned, VC invested, as well as publicly listed. He has managed small sales teams launching in new markets, as well as large global sales organizations with sales quotas of over $200 million. Now, onto this insightful episode with Kevin Dixon. Kevin, welcome to the Buyerside Chat. You possibly knew about this show before most people knew about it, that it was in the making. And I've been listening to your podcast, A Talk on the Buyer Side, and it's also sort of premised in a similar kind of space. Tell me, from your vantage point, how do you see the buyer you were selling to and you were engaging with, say, 20 years back, and the ones you are selling to today? How has this persona changed?
It's been dramatic. And let me tell you exactly when I started selling. I started selling in 84. Now, probably a whole bunch of your listeners weren't even born. In fact, their parents may have even been children at that stage. But if we start to think about gradually, the real big change has definitely been the last 10, 15 years. So let me position how a lot of us grew up in selling. When it was far more seller-centric, and it's what I call the good old days because it was so much easier. And I can sort of talk about, I'll tell you about a deal, and I tell people once that I actually won a £300,000 deal on the first appointment. And people are shocked by this, and I said, well, here's what happened. I met with the managing director of the company, and in those days, they weren't pre-informed. They didn't have access to all the information that the internet gives us. So the first thing would be to educate them. And it was a lot more telling than selling in those days. You'd educate them. So it was almost like a pitch, propose, and close. So I could tell them all about this great Ericsson Enterprise telephone system. I could then go on my price list. I can add it all up, and he'd go, okay, that works. And whether it was a capital expenditure or whether they wanted to lease it, I then had carbon copied paper where I could write the order out and they could sign it. And then that solitary decision maker would tell the rest of his organization, by the way, I bought this new Ericsson telephone system. And everyone else would go, okay, we've got to get on with it. So that's an extremity where a single person, a single decision maker, made the decision based on me educating them and closing them. Over a period of time is I moved on from being a sales guy to being a sales leader. And so I used lots of different CRM platforms. And I started to see that it was changing, that more and more contacts were getting involved. So the individual decision maker was disappearing. Multiple stakeholders were getting involved. And if anyone follows sort of Gartner's research, you'll see, especially over, I think they, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago, they said the average number of people now involved in the deciding buying was 5.4. A year or so later, 6.8. Last year or so, it was 10. This year, it's now 11. That's the number of people involved. And they say, if you sell technology, it's somewhere between 12 and 14. So, of course, they're not decision makers. But the big change was the formation of what everyone calls the buyer committee. This group of people who come together from across an organization to make decisions. And they will vary from decision makers at the top right down to users and other people through the organization. So the big change has been this collective group, and they're making decisions on consensus. So unless everybody can reach agreement, guess what? Decisions aren't being made, which is why probably so many people see no decision outcomes on their forecast. Everyone says it's the number one competitor. People can't make decisions because people is the complication. Too many people, more difficult to make a decision.
So when you are looking into the buyer side of this situation, by the time you are qualifying some organization as a potential prospect, buyer, whatever you call it, they have reached some kind of consensus that they need to buy this. Something, X. And there may be multiple variants of X, and now their job is to sort of narrow down on the one which works best for them. What is really going on in the buyer side?
More than what the salespeople know. Let me tell you what I mean by that. So I've already talked about the numbers, so it's fascinating. Gartner did this research, probably about 2,000 companies or whatever it was, so pretty extensive, across a wide range of industries. And then I asked sales leaders in every call, what's the typical number of people involved in deciding to buy? Well, 4, 5, 6. So typically less than half what Gartner's research is. So salespeople clearly are engaging and understanding everybody. So if we flip it over to your question where you said about this buyer side, and I recommend every listener check out Gartner's buyer enablement. Really read on that, on the buyer's journey and everything, because what it really describes is the chaotic world that is buying. Everyone talks about selling is hard, it's complex, it's tough. Guess what? Buying's tougher by far. And I'll explain one of the reasons why is that the inundation of information. So these different vendors, everybody's focused on marketing departments. Let's produce great collateral, great insights. And then they all send it, all the vendors send all of their information to the buyers. And the buyers then are inundated with a high quantity of high quality information. And they can't work out what's real, what's relevant, because there's so much information provided to them. Everyone says we're the biggest, the best, the fastest, most reliable. And the buyers almost hit analysis paralysis. Too much information. And a lot of the time, the buyer journey is looping. They're revisiting different stages to check and validate what they've done. So if you look at the buyer's journey, it's chaotic. And this is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to help. There's the key thing to do. It's an opportunity to help in the buying And that sounds alien to most sales people. And the only way they're going to help if they try and understand more about what's happening within their prospect buying process.
Just to sort of do a comparison, in your first example, you had to educate the buyer. The story that you told about the loan decision maker who took the decision to buy the Ericsson phone system. The first step was to go and educate that buyer. But today, you need to help the buyer. And how does that transpire? Because the buyer obviously has no lack of information. He is, as you said, he's overburdened with more information than possibly he can. He has a system to handle, right? And at the same time, he's talking to multiple vendors, because unless you are super lucky or doing something really cutting edge, you have five competitors out there who do the exactly same thing that you do, right? So how do you position yourself as a person who can help the buyer, and the buyer should recognize the fact that, yes, Kevin can help me or Shubhanjan can help me, and I should take that help. So how does that work out according to you?
You're absolutely right. I mean, first and foremost is quite often now, the buyers are better subject matter experts than the salespeople. They've been brought in for a specific job, or they understand. Because buyers aren't just procurement, they're right across an organization. The research they do before is extensive. So they don't need to be educated in most cases. The only thing, I try to say to salespeople now, stop thinking about selling. Think about helping. Product or service differentiation is what people try to achieve through selling. What they want is differentiation in the buying experience. You're trying to help them navigate their own complexity. So the first thing that I always talk about is that, and I found this from the podcast, I ask a lot of buyers to say, how often do salespeople create a project internally? They identify a problem and you go, great, never is what most of them say. So most of the time, a project's already involved, they invite vendors in to start talking to them about helping them solve that problem. Now, everyone talks about selling as being a case of you've got to identify the customer's needs. If they've defined it already, they'll tell you what their needs are. So where's the value add from the seller to help the buyer? Unconsidered needs. The guys at Corporate Visions, a great training company in the US, sort of came up and said, fact is, if you want to add value, come up with something that's going to help them that they hadn't thought of, that now sort of separates you from the rest of the vendors. Stuff you use from your experience of working that marketplace with companies like that and propositions that you sell. The more you can start to say, okay, that's great, you want to do this, but here's a few other things that work, customers of ours have found has really helped their business. So there's the value there is don't be your predictable sales guy. Think about helping. Don't go into the sort of contrived and biased discovery and questioning approach, which is really about trying to maneuver them to your product. They're smart enough to work out whether or not what you do is going to help them. Don't try and push them that way. Collaborate with them through the buying process. Be seen to be helping and guide them. One of the greatest assets I think I've ever had is sometimes to recognize and say, we're not a good fit for you. And buyers go, what? Sales guy being honest, we're not a good fit for you, but I'll tell you what would be is X. Now, that is a great thing to do because these buyers will remember me and they'll come back to me for something else in the future. But too often, salespeople are predictable. Too often, they're sort of stereotypical. We've got to sell at all costs. And that's when the buyers sort of tend to shut up, and you find that they're pushing back or they're not responding. A good sales guy knows where they can solve the problem that is a high priority for the buying team and helps and collaborates with that buyer team to solve it and go through their process. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. It's time for a short break. Kevin has insights into how decisions are getting made inside organizations. I asked Kevin how building of trust is being handled by sales teams and how informal advisory groups of peers are making a difference, groups that do not figure in any organizational chart. Kevin has some very interesting take on these. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped.
We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. Right before the break, I asked Kevin how sales organizations are working on building trust with their customers and how informal external peer groups are impacting buying decisions. So that brings me to two different points. One is that obviously we are dealing with a major trust deficit. We are doing very little to build that trust. I mean, yes, if you are a salesperson who can walk away saying, hey, I think my stuff is really not going to help you, or you have a better option and you should take that option, that's super rare. But otherwise also, we are not doing enough to build trust. So that's one area where I need to know your thoughts. The other thing is, this whole idea that you shared, and I get the sense of it, I do not know how well that can be executed by all manners of salespeople and all manners of companies, that is to find out hidden requirements which the customer is possibly not aware of. So one of the things that I hear a lot about is the peer groups of buyers. It's not even the internal people, not the 5.8, 5.4, 6.8, 10 people that Gartner is talking about. But this is a peer group. A CIO has a group of CIOs that he talks to in his industry and elsewhere. And there, that's where the inputs are coming from. And things can get made and unmade there. And we have no visibility of that at all. So two parts. One is building the trust, how we are doing it or not doing it at all. And other thing is, how do you see these peer groups impacting the selling process?
Trust has been the thing. I mean, God knows how long people say, oh, salespeople, you got to be the trusted advisor. Now, trusted advisor that's not something you can establish in a short term. Trust is built over a relationship of doing business with someone. And someone used to say, there's two things you need to be a trusted advisor. Advice and trust. So advice is your starting point. And this goes back to what I said earlier, where if you want to start to build trust, then stop acting like a salesperson at the beginning. Stop acting around your own personal selling agenda. And it all starts with, you know, these buyers have just evolved this sort of smartness where they know salespeople are asking questions as a springboard to solve it and pitch. Now, I always talk about doing discovery. Discovery is sometimes about doing discovery of things you might not want to hear that might dequalify it, might take you out of the equation. But the more you do ask questions that are very buyer-centric and very much about understanding them and what's important to them, etc., the more trust will start to be established because you're breaking the stereotypical mold of a salesperson. And buyers are smart enough to see that when you're doing things in their benefit, and I don't mean for the first 15 or 20 minutes, I'm talking about several calls, you're still sort of building and understanding. And that's why the more you think help and the less you think sell, the more chance that trust become part of the relationship. Now, what you mentioned about the CIOs talking together, that is incredibly important because reference, introductions, referrals, whatever it might be, they want to, a lot of customers now want to say, well, who else that I know has used your solution or what you do? Because are they going to take a salesperson's word for it? No, they're not. And that's because it's a well-trodden path of poor sales activities and actions of many salespeople before us. So, I was talking to a prospect last week, and when he's working on a deal, and his view was, here's my reference list. I'll give you a reference. And they said, well, of course you're going to give us a best possible reference going to say something great about you? And that's how buyers think about it. And they just say, well, here's our user list. You tell me who you want to speak to. So it's important to have customers that you look after all the way across. It's important that you have a market presence that the reputation precedes you. Because, of course, not every CIO that this CIO spoke is going to speak to is going to be one of your customers. But you know, creating a brand of a buyer-centric business, someone that helps their customers, not just sells to them, it's time-consuming and it can't be achieved. We live in an accelerated market now where everybody wants to gain the information and get responses really quickly. Sales cycles are longer, but their expectation to get the information off you is much quicker. I have sympathy for a lot of salespeople nowadays because it is difficult to sell. But where I don't have sympathy is for the salespeople who try and take shortcuts and they don't do all the groundwork. They don't focus on the intangibles of the deal. So I don't know if that's answering your question, but trust can't be established quickly. But what you can do is sow the seeds of trust by looking like you're acting like you're helping them, not trying to sell to them. And in terms of the peers and their groups, you can do a certain amount on that. So the more people that you've got, the customers that you've got good and sharing the gospel about what a great job you've done amongst the peers, because you can't control what gets said between these guys. But if you do a good job to start with, then guess what? They'll say good things about you.
Great. The other thought that comes to my mind, I don't know whether you're familiar with Sharon Drew Morgan and her work, the books and blogs that she writes. She has a model that a buyer has a 13-step process. Typically, most sales organizations are geared towards finding leads, which means these people have already taken a decision to purchase a certain kind of product. So you are trying to find people who have already taken the decision to buy, but they don't know which one to buy, and that's where you get in, right? However, this is possibly only 5% of your target market. The 95% is going through that process of internally selling the idea of the requirement of a certain thing and the fact that you cannot meet the requirement with internal resources or existing resources and so on. Do you have any thoughts as to how sales organizations can actually tap into much earlier in the buying process and not get in at a point when they're like ready to buy and but yet they're in the process of taking the decision that we want to buy?
What you've said is very typical salespeople, is that they want these ready-to-buy leads, or it's in the budget, whatever. And the argument I have with that is that if you see a bandwagon, it's too late. So build the bloody bandwagon to start with. And one of the things that's been coming out historically, you know, the demand was driven by the buyers. Now, COVID has really sort of recalled that bit, and there's less demand being driven by buyers because people are buying less for whatever it's different reasons within each organization. There's now an onus on salespeople to create demand. Do what a true sales professional will do is right from the beginning, create your own opportunities. Much harder, but guess what? If you get in earlier and create the value, if you're first to create value within the minds of the buyers, the percentage chance of you winning the deal rockets astronomically. It varies. Different people say that the first person to create value is 60, 70, 80% more likely to win the deal. Because guess what? You come to them, help them recognize they have a problem, help them identify that problem, and guess what? You're then best positioned. When it's like, okay, they've already defined that they have an issue, you and 3, 4, 5, 6 other vendors have been invited to it, where's your chance there? You haven't added value. It's now really a beauty parade of price or product. And you know, is that selling? I think there's elements of selling in it because it's competitive. But personally, a great salesperson is the person who creates the opportunity to start. Now, you mentioned Chandru Morgan, and yes, I'm aware of her buyer facilitation. And there's parts of it I agree with, parts of it I don't agree with. But isn't that what we call it? We all have opinions. And make either of us right, different circumstances, probably, yeah, I might be right one thing, she might be right another thing. What I don't agree is that her view is that buying only happens when all these ducks are in a row and all these sort of things have happened internally. Yes, that is a lot of the case, but not all of the cases. Buying's still happening on a daily basis. If it was down to the process that Chandru mentions, then buying rarely happen. But she, the buyer facilitation and collaboration is a great principle and one I advocate. So I certainly agree with that. But salespeople have got to start doing the harder work. And they think it's harder. They think, oh, God, marketing should be generating leads or outbound stuff should be generating leads. My job is to get a lead and deal with it. When you've got, let's say, for example, you've got 20-odd leads and that have been generated and they're all competitive, etc., the likelihood of you converting a high proportion, because if there's 20-odd leads, based on stats, 50% of them would do nothing. The classic boom, That means that 10 of the leads are going to be divvied up between you and all the competitors that have all been invited. So you might, if you get 20-odd leads, you might have a close rate of 2 or 3, maybe, on a good day. However, if you do the groundwork and you actually create 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 deals yourself, you might close 5, 6, 7 of them. It's harder work and smarter work, but the dividends and the rewards are much higher. It's almost like, unfortunately, I always think that leads is something, lucky dip. Lucky dip is something I grew up with when you go to the country fair and you put your hand in and you might pull out something good or you might pull out something bad. And lucky dip selling is when you just become part of this lead structure where you and every other event is invited and you might win some if you've got superior product, a superior price. Is that selling? No, it's not. It's still more telling than selling. Good salespeople create the demand. And that's tough, I don't get me wrong. It really is quite tough, but it's still possible.
Okay, there are two parts to this, right? One is that most of us, I would say 99% of us, if not more, are in commodity business, right? We are selling things which are also sold by other people. Similar things, right? So if you have a unique product, patent, good for you. But that's a minuscule number. How do you get into the process early if you are selling commodity?
Yeah, I view commodity slightly different. Although we might have competitors, I wouldn't want to see us as being commodity. Commodity is something I see as almost like a transactional sale. Few people involved, it's very price structured, and they're buying X amount of this, boom. There's less thought involved, less people involved in the process, less risk associated with the wrong decision. It's like a cool thing. Sometimes, even now when I talk to people about Boxstep, our system, it's not rocket science. We just help to organize people's approach towards a more sort of buyer perspective and to complement CRM. But people, and it could be categorized, like you said, as a commodity, because there are sort of competitors that overlap, but not directly. But people still see it, and it's almost like an aha moment for them, because they're just like, well, I didn't know this solution existed to help me. So you might see yourself as having competitive space and other people doing what you do, but it doesn't mean that every customer is educated on it and knows about everybody else and knows that there are solutions like yours to solve it. Sometimes, if you talk about product and service differentiation, the buyer's perspective doesn't see it like that. They say, well, I can't choose between vendor A and vendor A. Now, you can see I repeat that because they see it very similar. When they look at all of the different vendors out there, one vendor may have slightly better on this, another vendor might be slightly better on that, etc., etc. So it's very difficult to make a buying decision when everything seems to look at, taste, and smell the same in terms of competitive marketplace. So there's a flip side now in terms of there was this sort of period of product sale, price sale decline. Salespeople have an opportunity to add value. And they can add value by bringing insight, by helping in the process, by helping them navigate their own complexity, by bringing together the people involved in the committee. That's a funny thing when people say. So you can help people when they're deciding buying. You can actually start to create a buyer committee internally. A lot of the time, the buyer committee isn't ready to go. It's not like, okay, I'm a vendor, this opportunity's landed, and there's this committee of 10, 11 people ready to talk to all the vendors. It doesn't work like that. A lot of the time, buyers don't have a process for what you sell. Unless it truly is a transactional commodity, then a lot of the time, they might buy something you sell every 5 or 10 years, so there probably isn't a process. They don't know what the hurdles and challenges are associated with buying the solution type of what you guys are selling. So the people that can actually help them navigate that complexity, which is twofold. Firstly, it mitigates some of the risk of a no decision. Secondly, it builds that trust that we spoke about earlier on. If I gave to you Sue and Jan and say, right, you guys and you and your team have got a whole bunch of things to get done between now and your project end date. This is the sort of thing we do for customers like you day in, day out. And we know the pitfalls, we know the challenge you're going to face, we know the sort of questions you need to ask each other internally, we know the sort of people you need to involve in your organization because they're potentially going to become stakeholders. How would you feel if we shared our knowledge with you? Now that is so much different than I'm going to talk to you about my product, my service and things like that, and you know, the buying and your decision making, that's your problem. I'm a sales guy, you're a buyer, you deal with that. That's a missed opportunity. The more you share your experience of working companies with them, helping them to navigate their own challenges and hurdles, the more you're differentiating the buying experience. And the recent study that came out from Gartner, fascinating, 62% of buyers said they prioritize doing business with a company with a better buying experience. A better buying experience is not something, you know, online or whatever. Better buying experience is the engagement with you as salespeople. You should be helping them through their own buying challenges.
That brings me to BoxStep. Tell me what you are doing, what are you building here, and how do you think that it essentially eases the pains that buyers go through and in corollary, sales folks go through as well.
So BoxStep is really about helping salespeople to be more buyer-centric. So, you know, I mentioned earlier on, I spent 20 years as an exec sales leader, used all the CRMs like Salesforce, Dynamics, and Sugar. And you know, CRM's a massive market. Everyone's got a CRM. But does it really help you to sell? Does it really focus on the who, why, what, when, and how the right way? So, stop moaning about it, Kevin. Don't just sort of talk about the weaknesses or the gaps that CRM doesn't help with. Build something that helps people become more buyer-centric in complex and enterprise sales. So what I tried to look at is three elements of, and it's all based around the buyer committee. So when you first engage with them, what's important to them? Who's involved? What's their process? Think about that. Is that in CRM? No. You know, the individual people, their concerns, challenges, criteria, because selling is about people management now more than opportunity management. The more people involved, the more complex it becomes. Now, that's another thing as well. The bigger the buyer committee, the greater the risk of a no decision. So it's all about helping you as salespeople feel that, making sure you know what you need to know to sell to them effectively. And this is all about their business drivers. Everyone has all this sales training, and then do they really execute that sales training of understanding the business problem and the motive, the urgency, the outcomes? And is that addressed by CRM? No. Now, the next part is really about the collaboration, mutual action plans. Been around for a long time, predominantly Word or Excel. We've taken mutual action plans, which have been designed to help them through their own buying to a whole new level. And the final part is an outcome. You win it, you lose it, or no decision. Now's an opportunity to review. What did they think of you as a business or as a sales team? So we're sort of very much about the buyer committee. So if you believe in the concept of the buyer committee, and most organizations should, because it's exactly what they're faced with, then that's what we've sort of created Box Them to help with. So it's predominantly about helping sellers align their selling with their prospects buying.
Wonderful. Would you want to talk about something you would have missed out and you think could add value to this discourse?
Well, the only thing I would say is, and I think something you and I were chatting about earlier, is if we think about buying and then we think about sales, and one of the biggest problems that salespeople have and sales leaders have is forecasting. And you and I were talking about it earlier, is that most sales leaders think that their sales forecasting is a problem. And it isn't. It's a symptom. The problem all stems back to the fact that salespeople don't know enough about the buyers and the buying process. So the only thing, it's a summary rather than an additional thing to add on. Salespeople need to look at how do they understand more about the business problem, more about the buying process, more about the buying people that are involved and the support to each other. So I would ask anybody who's listening to this, revisit, whether you're an individual salesperson or a sales leader, go back and start thinking about these intangibles rather than the numbers. Too much focus is put on the numbers. And I'll leave you one last statement, which I say a lot, and I'll say it slowly because it can be, there's a lot of the same words in it. Most salespeople don't know what they need to know. Most sales leaders don't know that they don't know. Does that make sense to you?
Totally.
Salespeople don't know it. Then sales leaders don't know that their salespeople don't know it. This important buyer information, the buyer's perspective, there's not enough focus on it. We're still crunched on ourselves, our seller-centric approach. How do we sell what we've got into that account? How much money can we close on each month or quarter? If you can't close that, what are you going to backfill it with? It's all about the numbers. There's not enough focus on the information and the actions that lead to the numbers. And that's where you have to put on this buyer-centric mind.
The Buyer Site Chat is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink enables high-quality interactions between buyers and sellers through presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create personalized sales presentations and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversation. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 650-847-5884. That is 650-847-5884.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kevin, for being with us. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Well, thanks for having me.
Coming up in the next episode is an in-depth conversation with T.G. Dhandapani, former Group CIO of TVS Motors and Sundaram Clayton, where we dive into the step-by-step decision-making process inside a large manufacturing company.
Basically, the design department give what need to be manufactured, how accurately the product need to be manufactured. And the production engineering department decide what should be the type of machinery we need to buy it, whether it is a machinery or a processing plant in terms of paint plant or in terms of welding or in terms of any other chemical treatment plants and other things. The specification given by the design department is very important. Basically, if you call two or three suppliers, all of them will meet the basic requirements. Whatever may be the accuracy, what we are specifying, those accuracies and basic hygiene needs, they will be in a position to meet it. But in order to have long-term gain with the supplier, we have to look at what type of value adds they are giving. When we are talking to two or three suppliers, you know, the type of value adds what they give may vary from supplier A to supplier B. Supplier may offer you some three value adds, and supplier B may offer you two value adds, which will be totally independent of what has been offered by the supplier A. Most of the negotiation is taking place around this. Commercial negotiation is the last one.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes, unraveling in depth how the real buyers buy. Stay tuned.
Thank you for being with us today on the Buyer Side Chat. This is the podcast of record for the buyer side journey. And those who know, that's the journey that matters. We hope this conversation helped you with insights that you can go and apply right now to your own value transaction process. See you in the next episode of the Buyer Side Journey.